Hey, welcome back to the CCWSA podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City.
Stan Campbell, Oklahoma City. I don't know why I like saying that, dude.
It's good to have you back, man.
Man, it really is.
It's made a big difference having you back.
Yes, sir.
The CO to be in the city, in the office.
In the office.
You've done great things, even with all this.
The travel's been great. I'm not going to lie about that. The travel was awesome. You know, moving around the world. Being that we're all on lockdown right now, moving around was nice. I miss it,
dude. This is nothing like insane. Home. This time.
Yeah, it's a crazy time.
It's
We just got finished. We just made it past the 25th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing. Yeah. both Mike and I were responders to it. Got a cool badge for you.
Oh, yeah, I know you should have brought that in.
Yeah,
it was. It's weird. I went down there Sunday.
Oh, did you?
I went down there, did some photography. Of course, everything was shut off. But it was really weird because I was thinking about Mahalik and Franny and those guys that, you know, well, both Mark and Luke were both two of the main witnesses in that.
Yeah, because they were inside the building,
in that trial. Luke was, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I thought about them, and it was just really weird. You know, because every year at this time, we have the Oklahoma City, the marathon.
That's right.
You know, we have the.
That was shut down.
I mean, everything shut down. Yeah, it's just weird. And it was weird being
my
down
birthday,
there.
Same
Your birthday
day,
got
was
shut
down.
Yeah. it was weird. It was very weird. And this whole time is weird. The one thing about it, though, we've seen, and our guest today is going to talk about this, but we've seen more activity. We've seen an explosion in the firearms industry, which is good. And I think we have a lot of people, you know, I think let's go ahead and bring Larry in. Larry Vickers is with us today.
That's right.
If you don't know who Larry is, I don't know, you've been under a rock, I guess, if you're in the firearms industry. But we do have a lot of new people that are new to firearms.
So we're going to introduce them.
Yeah, and let him introduce himself. And we're going to talk about this because we were talking about it earlier about, it's just, people, I don't know that we're ever going to, you know, in the past, over the past, 10, 15 years, there's been a big battle of the firearms, Second Amendment. I don't know if we're ever going to have that again, which is what I'd like to talk to Larry about, whether we will see a big fight again in the future or not. But the one thing that is very evident is people have realized what firearms mean.
It ended up going from the redheaded stepchild of the industry, to that uncle that you want to see now. So it's kind of like, it's brand new to a lot of people. But Lav, let's start off before we get into the topic. Tell us a little something about yourself. Like, we know all about you, love you, but tell the new people about who you are and what you're about.
Well, heavily involved in the firearms industry, as you guys know. Have a YouTube channel, Vickers Tactical YouTube channel. We've got a branding of parts and accessories under the Vickers Tactical name, with Tango Down and Wilson Combat and Blue Force Gear. Brand ambassador for a number of companies like Bravo Company, CCW Safe. Long career in special operations in U.S. Army Special Operations. I was in Delta Force for 15 years. And then got out, went into the firearms industry and started doing training. So I wear a multitude of hats within the firearms industry. Heavily involved in every way and every day in the firearms industry as much or more than anybody I know. And I know you guys would agree, much to the chagrin of my wife, like every waking moment consumed with it and talking about it or researching it or whatever the case may be, but very heavily involved in the industry training. I have a line of books, Vickers Guide, coffee table books on firearms. So I was able to turn my passion and my experience in the military into a career after I retired out of the military, and here we are today.
Nice. And, it's good for us to come from law enforcement. We have a lot of, folks in the nation, law enforcement and also, military, folks. And thank you for your service also, Larry. People don't realize, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard, you know, when you introduce yourself, you can't say, you know what, I'm a hero. But I'm going to say, you know, Larry Vickers, he's a hero. He's our personal hero, but he is a national hero for, you know, all the service that he's done in the special ops, you know, exercises, we'll call them, that he's been involved in. But, you know, one of the things that we'd like to have you do is kind of talk about, because, you know, you talked about your books. Let's jump into the books first. Mike and I, of course, we have the awesome coffee table books. Explain, you know, your first one, why'd you jump into that, and give us a little bit more about where they can get them as well.
Well, interestingly enough, years ago, my good friend and mentor Ken Hackathorn brought up, hey, Larry, why, you ought to think about doing some coffee table gun history books, you know. And I thought, you know, it occurred to me to do that. And I said, you know, I'd like to do that, but how do you do it? I didn't have the ability to take the photos, to edit, do all that stuff. Well, out of the blue, literally within just a couple months of that conversation with Hackathorn, a guy by the name of James Rupley cold called me. He was a guy in Nashville, Tennessee, and out of the blue, just cold, you know, reached out to me and said, have you ever thought about doing some coffee table books? And I called him up and I said, as a matter of fact, I have. And then he said, well, I do photography and I'd be interested in organizing the books and editing and whatnot. And then he came to my house and we sat down and I detail oriented. He was like the perfect guy for that role, for that. Did phenomenal photography, was great at laying them out and all that. And then we decided to start with the 1911. I have a long history with the 1911. I do 1911. I got a series of 1911s with Wilson Combat, Vickers Elite Series. I used to build custom 1911s when I was in the military as a hobby. I really don't have time for that anymore. I enjoyed it, but it was a very time-consuming endeavor. I do occasionally teach a 1911 gunsmith class. Mm-hmm. And I still teach 1911 specific courses. So 1911 is a good place to start based on my history with that platform. So we started with the 1911 and it sold beyond what we ever imagined. We never even fathomed how successful it was going to be. Mm-hmm. If you had said, hey, how do you think this, it's probably two or three or four times more successful than we would have ever guessed. And that kind of launched the Vickers Guide series of coffee table books. And now we've reprinted the 1911 book. We're redoing it. We've done the AR-15 book. We've done AR-15 volume one, volume two. We've done Germany volume one, volume two. We've done AK volume one. So we've done a series of them now. You can find out about them at vickersguide.com. And now we're in the process of not only getting ready for future books, but redoing some of the older ones that have went out of print, like the AR-15 Volume 1 book, which we've completely redone. And it will be, without question, two things. The best book we've done to date, hands down, and the best book on the AR-15 M16 family ever printed, period, bar none. And you have my assurance on that. Anybody who gets the new book, the second edition of AR-15 Volume 1, Vickers Guide, and is not happy with it, I will personally refund their money. They see this book, it is absolutely going to blow their socks off. It's almost twice as big as the old one. We were able to get access to so many more guns. That's one of the great things about these books. They've opened the doors to collectors and museums, people. You know, if you reach out to them, they're, oh, yeah, I've heard of you guys. Or, hey, I've got access to a collection if you'd be interested in taking pictures. So it's kind of opened a ton of doors for us. But it has no sign of slowing down. It's vickersguide.com. I write them, but I've been getting help now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been tapping into other subject matter experts in the industry, guys who are really dialed in on certain firearms or aspects of firearms to get their input. And they've really... the books have really benefited from it. It's not just me talking about one particular firearm. I'm getting input from all different kinds of people to make the book even better.
That's awesome.
Nice. And these books are beautiful. They're, and I'm, I do a lot of photography. These photographs in these books are amazing. They're super detailed. They're awesome books. Are all of them still available?
AR-15 Volume 1 is sold out currently, but it is going to be reprinted and will be available later this year in a greatly expanded second edition. That's the only one, I think, that's sold out.
Sold out.
Nope. Take that back. 1911 sold out.
Yeah, first. I was going to ask about 1911. So, yeah, check out those books.
And we're redoing the 1911 one for next year or whatever, however we do it. But it's now going to be like two volumes. It was one volume. Now it's going to be two volumes. It's greatly expanded as well. But, yeah, so the AR-15 Volume 1, the second edition will be out later this year. Yeah, we're real happy with them. Real pleased with them. With the books, and now we have a certain number of people like you guys who, as soon as the one comes out, they automatically buy it to have the collection, you know. So it's we're real happy with it.
And that's the deal, they're all the same size, they're big books. They're all the same size, you can have the whole collection. Yeah, they're awesome. And I think we have a lot of bookshelf,
they complement each other on the bookshelf, you know, same layout, same format. Yeah,
they look good, they look awesome. I think we have a lot of...
By the way, James is a big fan of your photography.
Yeah, right? We've talked about that before. I follow him on Instagram. I'm seeing him and his boy all the time on there.
Oh, yeah. He told me. He said, you know, I got my daughter. He was on and on and on about the quality of your photos. Big fan of your stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, he's awesome. These books are amazing. I love going through those pictures because they're super detailed. I mean, yeah, you've seen them. I mean, they're amazing books.
What I really like about them too is the history, you know, on certain guns, the development. Like the stuff on the unit 1911, I thought was, to me as a gun nerd, that was just cool to be able to see it. Because, you know, for years you always heard about they run 1911s, this and that, but seeing one up and having the details on it, really cool.
And there's also photos in there of Larry working on guns in the shop. I mean, those are cool shots, too. So, yeah, it's awesome. A lot of good information in there. So definitely check those out.
Absolutely. So Lav, talk a little bit about, you know, COVID-19 and what it's done to the industry, you know, from your perspective. And then get right into talking to the new gun owners. Because there's a lot of them, but if you can just kind of talk about what's happening in the industry now for us.
Okay. Well, first off, I got to say, as soon as this thing hit, I said this was developed in a lab in China. I said that right off the bat. I said, there is no way this came from some wet market or whatever. I didn't buy off on that for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, I'll get off my soapbox now, but I called it right from the start.
And here's one thing about Larry, too. Whatever he calls, believe in. He's made so many calls in politics and everything to us over the last 4 or 5 years. He's spot on every time.
Yeah, that's so true.
Well, I hate to pat myself in the back, but I, of all the people I know, I predicted Donald Trump would be president way before anybody else, way before.
I remember
you at SHOT Show that year.
Yep.
I told my film crew.
Yeah, nobody believed you.
Donald Trump's coming. They thought I was nuts. That was months before the Republican primary. We're talking almost a year, the better part of a year before the election. And I said, I'm telling you, Donald Trump's going to be president. I knew it. As soon as this virus thing hit, I knew it was cooked up in a lab. I knew it. But we're, you know what? I don't want to get on a... off on a tangent, but this is the wife calling. Make sure she doesn't try to ring back in here.
Yeah, I remember we were sitting in our offices one time, and Larry brought up Donald Trump, and it was long before that. And that was the first time when I remember him talking about it, and it was before that.
Mm-hmm. Way before that.
Yeah.
But lost my train of
thought. So you're talking about not getting off on a tangent with what's going on with COVID-19.
I just did. I just got off on a tangent.
Just a little bit.
This is a unique experience. I've talked to all my friends in the firearms industry. My buddy Jason down at Lipsy's, the guys at Wilson Combat, my good bud Ken Hackathorn. I've talked to all my friends, and they all agree. Everybody's in total agreement. This is a watershed moment in the firearms industry and in the Second Amendment community. Because mm-hmm. now you have thousands upon thousands of people, they're first-time gun owners, first-time gun buyers, that just a couple of months ago would have never imagined they would ever own a firearm. And they realize now, I need to have one to protect myself and my loved ones. I don't have a choice. I have to have one of these. Because here is a situation that can develop unforeseen where there is no one to come help them. Mm-hmm. There's no one. And they now realize, oh, my God. And it's unbelievable. And I think we're going to look back at this will be the watershed moment in the Second Amendment in this country. I really think. That what you're going to see a big reversal and a lot of mentality for stuff like magazine bans, mm-hmm. assault weapon bans, possibly mm-hmm. like, you know, waiting periods to buy a firearm. I think you're going to see big ripple effects. Traditional stuff that liberals and anti-gunners would have run on and got some traction. Now, a lot of the people they would be talking to, a lot of people that would be their constituents are not going to hear of it. They're not going to hear of it. They're going to go, nope. I'm not playing that. I remember during COVID-19, mm-hmm. I had to wait 2 weeks to buy a firearm to protect myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it. I really think, and then what you're going to see, it's a trickle-down effect, guys. It's common sense, trickle-down effect. X number of people are going to get them. Once this thing dies down, they're going to stick it in a closet, and they're never going to touch it again.
Yes.
But there's going to be some X number of people that are going to go to the range and shoot them and go, you know what? This is awesome.
Yeah.
I like this. This is nothing like I thought it was going to be. They'll enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it will feed the industry. And now they'll be getting into training. They'll be getting into accessories, holsters. They'll be getting protection for concealed. You're going to see a giant trickle-down effect because you've now just got a massive influx of new gun buyers, first-time gun buyers.
That's right. And then, you know, when you think about it, too, if you look at what is going on in the news, you can still find that a lot of people are taking advantage, and I'm talking about bad people, are taking advantage of the situation in which, I mean, there's been people that's had COVID masks on already that have done bank mm-hmm. robberies. They've done home invasions with the coat. And because now when you see somebody walking up to someone's house with a mask on, I mean, it's the norm. It's a new normal. Mm-hmm. So you don't pay it any mind. It's almost like the 80s when we all kind of got, accustomed to car alarms, and then you no longer looked when you heard somebody break into a car. It just kind of like you hear the noise and you keep moving. Mm-hmm. So now you see somebody with a mask, it you don't think twice. You don't call the police. You don't do anything because everybody has a mask on. So, it's not something that is just, people are just being fearful of. Some people are actually taking advantage of these bad men and they're victimizing people. So, the influx is right.
I mean, let's face it. Law enforcement has come out and said, mm-hmm. unless you're in a certain criteria of active crime, we're not going to respond. They don't, and you can't be tough on them. They're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Remember,
they're overwhelmed. And then also, for their safety as well, because if you look at the numbers in New York, NYPD, thousands of officers, have contracted, COVID. And they really do have to pick and choose if it's not a violent crime. And most burglaries are not, and people are taking advantage of that.
Yeah.
And we talked about this last podcast as well with them allowing, the misdemeanor convicted out of jail early, So now you got you're flooding the system and the land with people that have done all these burglaries and such. And now the police are staying away and everybody's home. So, it's really making for a interesting time.
Absolutely. And it's going to be unbelievable. Obviously, it'll take some time to get real good numbers mm-hmm. and demographics on this and feedback. But everybody I've talked to, like Wilson Combat, for instance, March was the biggest month sales-wise in the history of the company.
Yeah.
My buddy Lipsy's, Jason at Lipsy's, told me a couple weeks ago, they had a day that was the biggest day in company history, and actually they quit taking orders by noon the next day because they were absolutely overwhelmed. Wow. And I got a good friend of mine, Mike Fisher, in the ammo industry, and he said this hysteria for ammo is unlike anything that has ever been seen. It makes all the other previous stuff look like child play.
Wow.
Are you getting any information?
It's on a level you can't even fathom.
Are you getting any information on projections for when the supply chain will fill back up for ammo?
That's what I was wondering.
I have not. You know, but that's a good question. I'll have to ask Mike. Because here's the deal. Get a load of this. Mike told me at SHOT Show 2020, because I always think he's a good dude. Porsche guy like me. That's a 911, so then we always talk Porsche stuff before we start talking gun stuff and ammo. But he told me the projection for 2020 for ammo was insane. We're talking like a 500,000 rounds of ammo. Half a billion rounds. Half a billion rounds of ammo that was projected for sale, and I don't want to say a 9mm only that was already pre-ordered, and then this stuff hit. You can imagine the hysteria that's in what's going on. God knows when it'll be back to normal.
Well, plus we got the election coming.
Well,
so
you hear from all these other guys, and Mike will tell you the same thing. It's fatigue. They just get beat down. Mm-hmm. They get beat down. After a while, it's just like it's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun responding to emails and sales requests, and you just get overwhelmed and you're like, you just want to get away from it all.
Mm-hmm.
So real quick, Larry, we're back on brand new owners. And you've been training folks for years, military and citizens alike. How do you approach somebody that has never even touched a gun before? How do you even start training them? What's the most important thing for them to look out for? Start us with the basics.
Thanks. Thank you for that. Here's the thing. Two things, particularly with handguns. People don't have a good sense of muzzle awareness and where the gun is pointed. The shorter the barrel length, the more they just don't have a good sense of where the gun's pointed. It kind of and to be quite honest with you, with handguns, it kind of ends at arm's length. At arm's length, if you're standing right next to them, you know, they'll have an idea. Yeah, they're kind of pointing a gun at you. But if you're, 8 to 10 feet away from them across the room, they can be pointing the gun at you and they're completely oblivious to it. It's like they're living in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So muzzle awareness. Now, if you were to hand them a rifle, which is dramatically longer, now they have much better situational awareness of where that gun's pointed because of the longer barrel length. So handguns, for whatever reason, there's almost like a blind spot, like I said, where they almost live in a bubble when they're handling a firearm, handling a handgun, and muzzle awareness and where the gun's pointed. So they got to really dial in on that. They got to dial in on, and then the other thing is, there's a reason why triggers are placed in the location they're placed. Triggers are placed where they are because they're easily accessible by the index finger. That's why they're put there. I mean, you don't have a trigger in a bizarre spot on the firearm. It's put in a place where you can get to it easily and make the gun go bang. The flip side to that is you can also put your finger in there inadvertently and when you don't want to, very easily. So that's the two things that people need to understand, which are kind of counterintuitive. It's kind of one of those things that stand where you go, hey, keep your finger off the trigger, watch where the gun's pointed.
Yes.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. That's the first thing that somebody will violate as soon as they hand a firearm. They just, because they may understand the concept, they may understand the words, but actually putting it into practice with a firearm in their hand, that is something where they've got to dial in on it. That is not something that happens naturally.
I'll tell you what.
That's the first thing you dial in on them. It's finger placement. Keep your finger out of the trigger guard, well away from the trigger guard, and you've got to stay aware of where the gun is pointed.
Every new gun owner I've ever handed a gun to, finger goes right to the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Right to it.
And another thing I've noticed with people who've never been around guns is they're so unsure about it that like Larry's saying, kind of everything just kind of goes out. Their common sense, everything goes out the window.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. You're 100% right, Mike. They're nervous. They're not sure what they're doing. They're anxious. They kind of fade out. They go into brain freeze, mm-hmm. and then they automatically do the two things like we were talking about, Stan. They start pointing the gun at stuff they shouldn't be pointing at, and their fingers in the trigger.
Correct. How do you fix that, Larry? You
gotta, whoa. Yeah, so you got to snap them out of that. Hey, whoa, watch your muzzle. You know, hey, finger straight. Keep your finger straight. And then it goes beyond that. But those are the first two things you got to hammer home right from the start. Mm-hmm. And then to go to what you're talking about, Mike, spot on. When they load the gun, new shooters, neophyte, new shooters, brand new shooters, they're famous for a pistol, let's say. They'll take it, slide back, and then they ease the slide forward because in their mind, mm-hmm. letting the slide go forward under spring tension, they associate that with the gun going bang.
Yeah. Correct.
In their mind, the gun is going to discharge if they let it go forward. And then what you'll see is, in many cases, especially with a gun like an AR, mm-hmm. Now they didn't chamber around completely.
Larry, do you think
not all the way home?
Do you think a lot of this is because of, and I'm talking about brand new folks, never touched guns before. Do you think a lot of the bad habits are because of what they see on television with these TV shows and these cop shows where people sticking their finger on the trigger?
Without a doubt, for sure, the finger on the trigger and the muzzle awareness is definitely tied into what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt about it. You've seen so much TV and so much movies and so much where, in many cases, the guys have their finger on the trigger, but in almost all cases, there's no muzzle awareness mm-hmm. at all. And mm-hmm. that is no doubt subconsciously fed into this.
Yeah,
that is,
you know,
it's certainly not helped things. It's only made it worse.
I think, you know, thank God, you know, and even television has started to lean on people in your industry to give them, you know, some guidance, even when they shoot. You know, I have family that's in the industry in reference to shooting movies and such. My sister's done several shows in which she's played an NYPD officer or detective, and they have experts come in, police and military, to show them. So they kind of got away from what they used to do, which was pointing the gun up and, you know, toward the ceiling and all kinds of crazy ways of holding the weapon. But speaking of that, you know, with new firearms folks, you know, because a lot of these people, they normally choose kind of, and I'm going to say, firearms that are popular versus what fits their hand or what they should carry, something that's made for them. What's your suggestion on someone that's done that? They purchased the weapon already, and now they haven't even made it to the range yet. How do they know this is the right gun for them?
Well, good question. That's a real good question, Stan, because here's what I routinely see. People are going to carry this gun concealed, especially females, right? They may have it in a purse or wherever. And they're like, well, okay, you need a small gun.
Yeah.
And they'll go get something small. Here's the problem. That small guns are much more difficult to shoot. Mm. They're much more difficult to shoot. You have a shorter sight radius. The trigger pull is basically the same weight as a larger firearm, but the actual weight of the weapon is less. So now your mechanical disadvantage is greater.
Mm.
So let's say you have a 5-pound trigger and the gun's lighter. So now you're pulling a 5-pound trigger on a lighter gun. See, you're at a mechanical leverage disadvantage. And the analogy I like to make to people is, it's like when you learn to drive, they don't put you in a Lamborghini when you learn to drive for the first time. Or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You go in a Ford F-150, you go in a, you know, or you learn to ride a bike. You don't go on a racing bicycle mm-hmm. when you learn to ride a bike. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with these firearms. You want to take and learn the basics on a standard size, duty size firearm. Glock 19, Glock 17, Sig P320, Smith & Wesson M&P, those standard size, duty size guns. That's where you want to start and learn the basics. And then you look at your Glock 43s and your SIG P365s and stuff like that. After you've got a handle on the basics, remember, it's a lifelong quest to master it. I'm just talking about you got an understanding of the basics before I'm going to grab the gun that I'm going to carry, my P365 that I'm going to carry, the which now is more difficult to shoot. Mm-hmm. The fundamentals are all the same. They're just more difficult to apply. That is super common. I'll see females show up to classes and, well, this is the gun I'm going to carry. And it's like, yeah, but right now it's mm-hmm. not the gun you need to be learning mm-hmm. to shoot on.
Got you.
Very common. Another one, real common. And I'm convinced this goes back to manufacturers giving incentives to gun shops, like kickbacks, rebates, incentives, mm-hmm. or whatever, is you'll see people show up with double action, single action pistols. Mm-hmm. New shooters.
Explain what that is real quick before you jump in.
Okay, double action, single action pistol, SIG 226, Beretta M9, HK USP. So where the first shot is a long double action to the double action trigger pull. So the hammer comes back and fires, and then once the slide cycles, now the hammer's cocked, and then you have a much shorter trigger pull, much lighter trigger pull in single action. So we call them DASA guns, double action, single action guns. Mm-hmm. And they started with the Walther P38 of World War II fame. German service pistol, Walther P38, was the original double action, single action service pistol. There was other ones they had, like the PPK and whatnot, were small guns. But I'm talking about a service pistol was the P38. And that long double action trigger pull, that 12, 13, 14 pound trigger pull, is meant as a mechanical safety. So if a guy has his finger on the trigger, you don't have to worry about him having an accidental discharge because he has a 14-pound trigger pull to overcome. Well, we went through a period of time in law enforcement and in obviously the U.S. military mm-hmm. where they carried this and they had a double-action, single-action pistol like the M9, and that long double-action trigger pull is a mechanical safety. Now, we really don't need them. We realize now, wait a minute, we can train guys to keep their finger off the trigger. Mm-hmm. And since we've done that now, that long double action trigger pull is no longer an advantage. It's actually a big disadvantage. So they've really, really faded in the industry. I mean, you sales of them are down. They've just faded dramatically. And what you see is, guns like the Glock or the SIG P320 or the HK VP9 or the Smith & Wesson M&P, which are striker fired, that have essentially the same trigger pull, exactly the exact same trigger pull every shot, they now dominate. Hmm. They absolutely dominate. And so when you see new shooters show up to a class and they're shooting a double action, single action pistol, and you go up to them and say, hey, somebody at the gun shop recommend? Yeah, a guy told me this is what I needed. And I know exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. They're no doubt about it. They're getting a rebate. They're getting a sales kickback. They're getting some kind of a kickback for selling this metal frame, double action, single action pistol to new shooters. Because generally, these newer shooters are going to be, they're going to be targeted into guns like Glocks, P320s and whatnot, which is actually a better fit for them, mm-hmm. you know? Versus that double action, single action pistol. Now, when you see somebody who's been shooting them a long time and whatnot, and you go up to them and ask them, they go, hey, I was in the Navy and this is what I carried, or this is what I carried in the Army, and go, got it. You know, or hey, I was, when I was, you know, a police officer, we carried this, got it, no problem. Mm-hmm. But newer shooters, there are two things you see. They're showing up with small guns that are difficult to shoot because the theory is, well, this is what I'm going to be carrying. This is what I need to learn to shoot on. And actually, that's misguided. It's, yeah, you may be carrying that, but you need to learn the basics on a bigger, easier to shoot pistol. And then your double action, single action guns are being sold to newer shooters inappropriately. It's mm-hmm. the wrong gun for them. In most cases, they struggle tremendously mm-hmm. with the double action trigger pull. They really struggle. And inevitably, what will end up happening, they realize by the end of the class, they need a different gun, or somebody will loan them a different gun to get through the class.
What's your opinion on, because Mike and I talk about often, you know, visualization techniques and also dry firing. What's your opinion on training with the firearm before you put bullets in it?
Oh, great idea. Delta, when we started out, guys would do hours upon hours of dry fire before they ever went out on the range and fired a live round. Anything that is mechanics related, your draw, your reload, your malfunction drills, any of that stuff that's related to mechanics and the actual firing of the shot is secondary. Not that it's not important. It's important. But you go, hey, I'm trying to focus on the draw stroke now, or I'm trying to focus on the reload right now. Anytime that the mechanics are the thing that is your primary focus, you'll actually get just as much out of dry firing it as you will doing it with live fire.
Awesome.
You can dry fire it with no dummy rounds, or you can live fire or dry fire it with dummy rounds, like reloads and stuff. You can dry fire with dummy rounds, and you'll get just as much out of it because you're focusing on the mechanics. You're not focusing on the shooting. And actually, the shooting in some cases, especially for newer shooters, can kind of muddy the waters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One, a lot of them are kind of startled with the gun going off. Two, you see, okay, let's say I do a draw stroke, and it's a good draw, but I shoot a bad shot. Well, you'll be thinking about the bad shot. You won't be thinking about the draw stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that's related to mechanics, you're better off. You'll get just as much out of it dry firing it as you will with live fire.
Absolutely.
Is there anything you recommend for people if they're going to dry fire? Like when Stan and I used to do like entry training stuff with the police department, we would always come in, unload it, put a like the yellow tape in, close it. Is there something you recommend if people are going to do that at home to make sure to, you know, let them know that that's not loaded? Or do they make something for?
Yeah, that's a real good question. Because there's horror stories. Here's what I would say. Designate a dry fire area and make sure there's no ammo in that room at all. Mm-hmm. And no ammo ever goes in that area.
Nice.
Ever, period. So designate a dry fire area. It might be your garage, whatever, your shop, whatever. But you never, ever have ammo in there.
Mm-hmm.
And have a definitive start time and a definitive stop time. Because notoriously what happens, this is what happens, many, many cases of it. Guys will dry fire whatnot, then they'll top the gun off, put it back in the holster, they'll go about what they're doing, and they'll like re-enter the dry fire zone. Now the gun's loaded, and they decide they're going to make one more presentation, boom, fire up a shot. That happened to Ken Hackathorn.
Wow.
Exact same thing happened to Ken Hackathorn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to make it a start and stop. It's definitive. And in the dry fire zone, there's never allowed any ammo at all.
I love that.
Yeah.
So that's the area you dry fire. There's no ammo ever goes there. And you start your dry fire session and you end your dry fire session. And that's it. Because there's many people have like, oh, hey, I'm going to get one more draw stroke in. Boom. The gun goes off.
There was actually a case here in Oklahoma City. It was years ago, but it was a guy at Tinker got a gun, and he took it home, and he lived in an apartment. I think Gary was talking about it. Gary may have even worked it, but he unloaded it, was dry firing it, loaded it, put it up on the fridge or something, came back later, grabbed it, boom, sent one through, went through the neighbor's apartment, and there was a lady that lived next door to him. And he didn't do anything, you know. He's like, oh, crap. Well, like the next day, the maintenance guy said, hey, have you seen so-and-so? And they went to her apartment. She's dead.
Oh, that's
yeah,
terrible.
And he ended up.
Whoa.
Yeah, he ended up doing time. He was a serviceman. I think he was at the Tinker Air Force Base.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what eventually happened was they turned it over to the military, so he got tried there somehow. But I think Gary had worked that. So I like that, what you're saying about the time. You just put a time on it and do that. Because it's so – even if you have, you know, some kind of visible, I mean, it just
– One thing I've always tried to do dry firing is, you know, it goes back to the four rules kind of, but – I try to dry fire towards something that if everything else goes wrong and the round leaves a gun, it's not going to hurt anybody.
Mm. Yeah.
You know,
boy, that's a smart one. That is smart. Justin. Great idea.
And I've, you know, Larry, I'm sure you're the same way. I mean, you fool around with guns long enough, complacency will kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll absolutely, well, you have to be present all the time.
It only takes once.
Yeah.
It takes once. You know, and there's in the industry, there's two kinds of people, those who've had an AD and those who are going to have an AD.
Yeah.
If you handle them long enough, you eventually will. It's that thing Justin's talking about, making sure it's pointed in a direction where if something happens and it goes bang, you're not having to call 911.
You know, I saw something the other day on the internet. They said the two loudest sounds in the world are when you expect a bang and get a click, and when you expect a click and get a bang.
That's a good one.
Let's right quick, Larry, go over the basic firearm safety rules, because you've already hit on two, but because a lot of people newer to firearms may have never heard of that. And that's what he talked about as well.
Know your target and what's beyond it. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. You need to know what you're shooting at and know what's beyond it. And that where that comes from, part of that comes from is when you go to the range, you have a bulletproof backstop there.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of creates an artificial training environment
mm-hmm.
where you're like, okay, there's the target and it's a bulletproof backstop, good to go. In the real world, you can't assume you're going to have a bulletproof backstop if mm-hmm. you're carrying a gun, you know, so it's almost like the range becomes an artificial training environment.
Mm-hmm.
So you need in the real world, not just the range, but in the real world, you need to know your target and you need to know what's beyond it. All right. Number two, treat guns as if they're loaded at all times. That is a rule that is very commonly violated because people understand that. But what actually happens is it's the opposite. People, unless they know definitively the gun is loaded, they'll assume it's unloaded.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is go into a gun shop. Guns and see what I'm talking about. They automatically assume with the guns, it's in the gun counter, it's empty. So, you know, that becomes their default mode. Instead of the opposite, well, I'm going to assume the gun's loaded until I verify that it's not. So you got to handle guns as if they're loaded at all times. That is something that is counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
It is not. Even though you may understand the concept, it's something you got to force yourself to put in the habit. Number three, don't allow your muzzle to cross anything you're not willing to destroy. So once again, you got to make sure the gun's pointed in a direction that you want it to be pointed in. Now, once again, on the range, you know, pointed down range, if you have a firing line or whatever the case may be, you know, that's much easier to do because it's a range safety protocol, keeping the gun oriented in a safe direction.
Mm-hmm.
In the real world, remember, there is no firing line, right? You're not in a range. So you got to be on top of muzzle awareness at all times. People walking in and around or whatever the case may be, and you've got your pistol out, you got to stay on top of muzzle awareness, you know, and the responsibility is on you to make sure you don't sweep people with your muzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And then last but not least, of course, the golden rule to all of them is finger off the trigger till you're ready to shoot.
That's right.
That's the golden rule. Because in the real world, law enforcement, military occasionally sweep each other with their muzzle as a matter of doing their job. There's mm-hmm. kind of no way around it. You want to be aware of it. You want to minimize it. But there's times when you're going to sweep your buddy with your muzzle.
Mm.
There's no way around it. So you're going to violate, don't allow your muzzle to cross anything you're not willing to destroy, as a matter of doing your job. The flip side to that is, the kicker to that is, it's 10 times worse if you do it and your finger's in the trigger guard. Yeah. What saves the day is finger well away from the trigger guard until you're ready to shoot, until you've identified your target and you're ready to shoot.
You know,
so that is, of the four safety rules, know your target, what's beyond it, treat all guns as if they're loaded, muzzle awareness at all times, and finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. That last one is the golden rule. That is the one that will save your bacon in case one of the others kind of falls down on you.
That's one of the beauties of the four rules, that you can break any one of them and come out okay. You know, if you have your finger on the trigger and you let a round go, but your muzzle's pointed somewhere that it doesn't matter and there's no target there,
mm-hmm.
you'll survive. You'll be embarrassed and you may have to pay for something, but nobody will get hurt.
Yeah.
But if you ever break two of those rules at the same time, any two, that's when bad things happen.
That's right.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Larry showed – I learned something from Larry. We went out to Arizona that I was surprised that I never had seen because on law enforcement, I mean, we were told that. Both of us were on entry teams. It was always finger off the trigger. But you showed us at that course you ran what you called – was it the reference position?
Register position. The register position. I got it from my buddy.
Do you have a firearm where you could show that or –
No, I don't.
Well, you can explain it. You can explain it.
So, finger straight, you have your trigger guard. You have like a Glock or a Sig P320 or whatever, and you got your trigger guard here, and all I got to do is curl it in on the trigger. Mm-hmm. That's the default mode. Most people go, okay, finger straight, I'm out of the trigger guard, I'm safe. You are, but here's the problem with that. If you stumble or fall and you start to get the grab reflex going to keep to break your fall, you can go from finger straight and then discharge around pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why you don't want to just be finger straight. You want to accentuate that and bring it up alongside the slide. Say if it's a Glock and you're a right-handed shooter, you want to be touching the bottom edge of the ejection port.
Yeah.
If it's a left-handed shooter with a Glock, you want to be flat against the side of the slide.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you call the register position. And that's where you go back to. You go back to the register position whenever you're handling the firearm, whatever the case may be. Think about searching your house in the middle of the night. You know, where's my finger going to be? I want it to register position. I want to be well away from the trigger guard. I don't want to be anywhere near the trigger guard. So in case something goes sideways, I'm not going to have an accidental discharge.
Nice. Hey, Larry, and I'm still talking about newbies here. If I was brand new, I just bought a gun. I'm trying to figure out dominant eye, dominant hand. How do I figure out what's my dominant hand and what's my dominant eye, and does it matter?
Well, dominant hand really doesn't. In most cases, dominant hand is going to be the hand you write with or the hand you throw a baseball with. That's going to be your dominant hand. The dominant eye, the good thing about a handgun is, see, with a pistol, I have leeway left and right. And left and right with my head and my hand. So if I got to tilt the gun a little bit to the left to line up my left eye, my right hand, I can. If I got to tilt it a little bit to the left to line up my right eye and my left hand, I can. So I've got this leeway, a little bit of leeway either way, so it's no big deal. For instance, I shoot a pistol right-handed and left eye.
Mm-hmm.
No biggie. Now, long gun's a different story. Whatever the dominant eye is, right or left, you need to be shooting a long gun from that same shoulder.
Correct.
So you're not trying to lean over and line up your other eye with your sight. So dominant hand, what dictates what shoulder you fire your long gun from is where your dominant eye is.
Yes.
With a pistol, it's no problem because you've got that leeway. I mean, you've got the ability to move your head side to side.
Mm-hmm.
The way you figure out dominant eye, there's many different ways. One of my favorites is you take a circle like this. At arm's length, right? And keep one eye, just keep both eyes open and bring that circle back to your eye. And the eye you bring it back to is your dominant eye.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I think ours should be point your finger into the corner.
You can do the exact same thing pointing to. Mm-hmm. You can do the exact same thing pointing. But I like the one with the circle.
I like that.
You look at a distant object, could be a light switch or any number of things across the room. With your finger, like this, put it out, and then keep it in focus as you bring that circle back. Now, don't do this stuff to line it up and defeat the whole exercise. Keep your head, stationary, right? And bring that circle back to your eye, and that's your dominant eye.
Yeah, you know, like when I was on the tactical squad, we you know, I too was, you know, right hand strong, left eye dominant. So I shoot my pistol that way. My AR, I would shoot left hand, left eye. But then my bolt gun, I would shoot right hand, right eye, you know, because I have more time just to line it up and to be more precise. But, you know, so I learned. Then I also practiced with the pistol, left hand, left eye as well. So, you know, I was all over the place, but I trained that way. I mean, and you can get proficient if you do train in that manner.
Well, we're two things. Eyesight is dominant.
Mm-hmm.
for instance, my left eye is significantly stronger than my right eye. So shooting's visual.
That's right.
It's all visual. It's visual. So whatever allows you to see the best shooting, that's what rules the day.
That's right.
So if you can go, well, I've met many people. Well, I'm right-handed. I'm so used to doing everything right-handed. And, you know, I want to use my right eye. It's time out, man. This is a different animal.
Yeah.
This is about vision. And if your left eye is dominant and it's significantly stronger than your right eye, you got to start doing stuff with your left eye, period. End of story.
That's right.
So that's what I tell everybody. Where you get by that, Stan, is when you run into people who have good vision with both eyes.
Yeah, that's me.
And yeah, if they have good vision with both eyes and one just happens to be dominant over the other, you can get by with what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Where it falls down is when one eye is dramatically stronger than the other and they're trying to fight that dominancy because they're being right-handed or left-handed. That's where it falls down.
That's right. Hey, and just to change channels a little bit, we're still talking to new people. And sorry for all of you who just love Larry for being, you know, high speed, but we got to break this down for everybody that's brand new. But let's talk about two things. I want to talk about home storage because you have a lot of weapons, but now they may have just one, and this is their first time, how to store my weapon at home. And then I also want you to talk about what me and Mike bring up often, which is de-escalation and avoidance, and also, you know, when you shooting as a last resort. So can you talk about those topics?
Yeah. Two things. You need to look, if you live by yourself, you know, you're by yourself, storage of the firearm, that's a different, you know, situation than if you're living with your family. You got your wife there and your kids and whatnot, and that's a totally different situation. One thing you want to look at is, you want to be able to get to the firearm, you know, obviously when you need it, and be able to put it into action so you don't, like, have ammo in one room and the guns in another. But you also don't want to make it easy if you got, you know, a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old, it's easy for them to connect the dots and make the gun go bang. You don't want that easier. So there are things out there, you know, for instance, something as simple as a chamber flag.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a chamber flag sticking out of your gun, something that you could literally grab and pull out of the chamber, rack around in the chamber, and you're ready to go. Whereas a kid, that's just, it's not something that's feasible for them. Or if you have, let's say you have an AR, you know, you have a chamber flag and you even have a magazine in a buttstock pouch. You know, so you take the chamber flag out, take the magazine in, rack it, and you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So try to strike a good balance of having the gun accessible but stored in a way that's safe in case the 6 or 7 or 8-year-old come across it. So, you know, that's stuff you need to look at. You can certainly go down the route of, you know, having locks on it and all that kind of stuff. There's a number of different ways there. You got to balance that out with, okay, you know, what's the chances of me being broken into and I need to get to this gun quick? If it's something that I got to get to fast, you can make the gun cumbersome to employ.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to think through that process. And really, a lot of it boils down to your situation at home. Whether you live by yourself, you live with your wife, you live with, you know, with your kids, whatnot, you got to really take a hard look at what you got. You can also get a gun safe, and you don't have to get a big gun safe. You can get a gun safe that's essentially small enough that you keep the gun stored and ready to go,
mm-hmm.
But also it's quick to get into.
Awesome.
It kind of depends. And then on top of that, de-escalation, you know, guys, in my mind, you guys can certainly chime in on this. If you're in a home invasion type situation, you grab your gun, somebody's come into your house in the middle of the night, that is a different situation than mm-hmm. Walmart parking lot and somebody's coming up to you, harassing you, want your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, understand that. They've came into your house, man, that to me, they crossed a pretty serious line there.
Yes.
I'm not saying don't warn them and don't tell them to leave your house. That's probably prudent, but understand something mentally, in my opinion, they kind of mentally crossed the line. When you break into somebody's domicile,
mm-hmm.
you have to understand that, you know, for many, many people, the average person, that is essentially you're giving them a license to shoot it. Mm-hmm.
And most states recognize that.
That's right.
You know, most states recognize that.
And then sorry about that too, Lav. I actually meant, because we already know home invasion is a different story than concealed carry. Now, one of the good things about COVID is that this is for the first time, because we've been beaten to everybody, you know, for a couple of years now, you know, talking about, you know, situation awareness. This is the first time that everyone is aware of this situation because they're being mindful of the 6-foot rule. They're mindful of people coming at them. They're not wearing masks. They no longer have their head down in there because they're really paying attention to people now, which is a good thing about this thing. The bad thing is now you do have a whole bunch of people with brand new firearms, never carried concealed before. And even if they're preparing for Armageddon, like I say, you need to be prepared for Armageddon, but also know that you're going to run into Aunt B. So you're going to run into more, mm-hmm. more so than often. You're going to run into an incident that is not a deadly force incident, and that's when you have to be mindful of de-escalation and avoiding people, because they also have, because we talked about earlier with you saying about the police walking away from certain things. One of the things that I know I've heard from policemen here in Oklahoma City, they're allowing the homeless guys to just leave them alone, right? If they don't have masks, if they're... But there's a lot of folks out there that are homeless that are also mentally ill. Mm-hmm. So they're going to violate that space. They're going to ask you for money. They're going to, you know, you're going to think that it's aggressive. But just because you're scared doesn't mean that you should shoot somebody. Does that make sense? So
yes.
That's kind of where I was going with that, is that, you know, talking about how to be mindful of, you know, not being so quick. I mean, you really have to understand the situation before you decide you're going to take somebody's life. So that's kind of where I want you to go with that, is kind of, you know, people think just because you've been through so much and you've had so many different experiences in your military life and also as a trainer, that you'll be quicker to shoot. But it's usually, like we talk about, those who train more than others look into their actions and, you know, their decision making is much better. But kind of speak on that, if you would.
Well, the first thing I'm going to say right off the bat, if anybody watching this, if you haven't watched the videos and stuff that CCW Safe has, you need to do it, because there is a wealth of knowledge there. You've got subject matter experts there that are sharing knowledge that's just priceless. So right off the bat, you got to do that. The second thing is, I always like to go back to what Don West told me. I remember we were SHOT Show one year, and I was picking his brain. I call him GOAT. We call him GOAT, greatest of all time. I was picking him as a brain on some things, and he brought this thing across that really hit home with me, and I've never forgot it. Is in the eyes of the reasonable man. You have to look at this in the eyes of the reasonable man. You know, if you're on trial for your life because you shot somebody and you've killed him, and now you're on trial, in the eyes of the reasonable man, in the mind of that reasonable person, a reasonable lady or man that's in the jury, what are they going to think? Does your actions jive in the eyes of the reasonable man? So when you're doing stuff, if you have the ability to withdraw, back up, get away. You know what I mean? When you bring the pistol out, you got to be thinking about something. When you bring that pistol out and you point it right at him, that is an aggressive action. That is an aggressive action. You need to bring the pistol out, have it ready, but have it down in a position where you're in a defensive posture. You're not in an offensive posture. You're in a defensive posture when you bring the pistol out. You know, understand, you need to be looking at stuff from, you know, those two things right there. Bring the pistol out, bring it to the low ready, voice your commands, and withdraw as, you know, if at all possible. I mean, that in the eyes of the reasonable man is the prudent thing to do. And you're right, Stan. Both of you guys are right. The guys that got more training, they have more wherewithal and they have more mindset and they have more options. They have the ability to think this stuff through. Because most cases, there's certainly instances where it's not the case. We know that. Mm-hmm. But let's face it, most cases are going to be situations where you do not have to use deadly force. Mm-hmm. Most of them are not going to be there. They're going to be in one of any number of other categories. Could be a miscommunication, could be somebody's high on drugs or mentally ill, It could be somebody that once the gun is out, they're like, whoa, 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 they no longer lose interest. You don't have to cross that line to using deadly force.
Yeah, one thing I was going to say, reasonableness is that's what it's all about. And the thing is, in the heat of the moment, sometimes you don't have the ability to think reasonable. That's one thing we talk about, thinking about, you know, visualization techniques, or just kind of putting yourself in certain situations mentally, you know, when you're sitting at home, kind of thinking about different scenarios, because it's really easy for people to act in the heat of the moment in a way that they think might be reasonable, but then when they step back away from it, they see that maybe it's not, or somebody else can see. So, and that's one thing I think that the people, for new people, they really need to also start out with the laws, mm-hmm. you know, your state laws. I mean, a lot of new people may not know what brandishing is or have ever heard of brandishing, but brandishing can end you up in jail pretty quickly. And
absolutely,
you know, I think one of the biggest things is that a lot of people do is, you know, if they do draw their firearm and somebody backs away, they reholster and think, okay, well, it's over, mm-hmm. and they don't go call the police. Well, you can guarantee that other person is going to call the police. So that's one of the biggest things, you know, always call the police if you have to, and then, you know, research the laws. But Yeah, go ahead.
I want to bring it up. You got tons of resources at CCW Safe here. You got tons of resources.
Thanks, Larry.
Tap into that, study this, get knowledge, information. You got some of the people, I mean, like Don West, GOAT, you got some of the best people in the world at this stuff, you know, that's tied into CCW Safe. You need to tie into this knowledge. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Appreciate that. Well, before we wrap it up, we need to wrap it up. We're getting on some time, but I want to – one thing, Larry, we do is we kind of do at the end kind of key takeaways. And, you know, my thinking back of what we've talked about, you know, I think I like cyclical. I believe in cyclical patterns, you know, and every 80 years, starting with the, you know, Revolutionary War and then the Civil War and then World War II, and now we're 80 years ahead. I think that this, like you said, I think this is going to be a moment in history that not only was Second Amendment, but a few other things too, but we are at that time where this is a changing point in history, and not just here in the U.S., worldwide on a lot of this stuff. With Second Amendment, it's really going to be U.S.-based, but I do believe that that's one thing that that is a takeaway from this, and especially – the wisdom of Larry Vickers what he knows, because he understands a lot of this. I mean, he's the guy in the firearms industry. He understands Second Amendment, and I think there's going to be big changes in our society.
Hey, one thing I didn't mention this earlier. I want to mention it now. If you're a gun guy out there, now's not the time to be smug. Now's the time to be the brand ambassador for the gun community.
Good
point. And for the gun owners. This is when you want to be the brand ambassador. You got your neighbor who, you know, is a liberal, and now they're asking you for help on guns and stuff. Help them out.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know.
That's awesome.
Now's the time. You don't want to be smug. You don't want to be arrogant. You want to be that brand ambassador. Because these people are now realizing they're kind of getting that light bulb moment that you got a long time ago. Now mm-hmm. they're getting it. Mm-hmm.
And then for me, I'm going to call it my takeaway, but I'm going to put it all together, which is if you're brand new to firearms, you got to go to the basics. So find, you know, some instructors online, like Larry Vickers and some others, and start at the basics. Don't jump ahead thinking you're going to be automatically tactical. Think about the basics, get the basics down right. Don't put any bullets into that gun unless you're ready. So your mindset has to be right, and you need to do your dry fire exercises with what Larry said was awesome, which is to mm-hmm. find you a dry fire area and don't bring any fire, you know, ammunition into it. But make sure that happens. Make sure you're ready. Don't let your ego get ahead of your experience.
Yep.
Justin, what you got?
That's right.
For me, we discussed it, but the four rules of firearm safety, mm-hmm. You know, we had a thing when I worked at in industry that safety rules are written in blood. You know, yeah. And it's a cliche, of course, but there's a lot of truth to it. Mm-hmm. And if people will follow those rules, especially like Larry said, you keep the finger off the trigger, the gun is not going to go off.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's first among equals. But situation, muzzle awareness, finger off the trigger. If people follow those, never have any problems.
Yeah. Good. Bingo. Well said.
Well, thanks a lot, Larry.
Awesome. Yeah, hey, it's great to have you on, man. Good to see you again. It's been a while.
Appreciate it. Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to this stuff going, getting past so we can hook back up.
That's right. We're going to bring you out here, do some videos and stuff for our basic shooters. Cool. And get some stuff going for us.
Couple things, VickersTactical.com. What's the books? The Vickers Guide.
VickersGuide.com.
And then check him out on YouTube. He's got some great videos, especially if you're new to firearms.
Something else, anybody that, especially for Glocks, Larry's got some of the best accessories out there. Tango Down. Mm-hmm. If it's got Larry's name on it, it's a good part.
True that.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin. Get it.
Hey, thanks, Lav.
Something I've always strived to do. All right. Have a good
one, guys.
Thanks, guys.
You guys be safe. Take care.
All right. Talk to you later.
That was excellent.